On the phone now, I have Dr. Christina Kenny. She's one of the contributors for a new podcast called Heteropessimism. I'm going to let her explain what that is. Hello, Christina.
Hi, T. Thanks so much for having me on today. It's really great to be here.
Absolutely happy to have you here. Please explain to me what this term is.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we first came across it as a group. So it's myself, Jennifer Hamilton, Matthew Allen, and Felicity Joseph, and we, the four of us, with our amazing audio producer, Daz Chandler, are the heteropessimists. And heteropessimism is a term that was coined by a PhD candidate scholar called Asa Sarazen. And Asa describes heteropessimism as performative disaffiliations with heterosexuality that are usually expressed in the form of regret or embarrassment or a hopelessness about straight experience. And these disaffiliations or rejections, if you like, are performative, which means that, you know, people might talk about how they want to leave their husband, or they talk about how, you know, their husband is their fourth child, but it doesn't really mean that they're going to do anything about that. So it's not that this rejection or this kind of negativity or pessimism about the heterosexual, about cis, I should be very clear, like cis, monogamous heterosexual relationships is what we're talking about here. Mm. Yeah. So that's kind of really the phenomenon. And you might have seen it around in like Hetz Explain Yourself
So, I mean, I'm cis female heterosexual, and I play a lot of sport, and I'm around a lot of people of the, and I constantly, am apologizing for making that choice. And it's not like there isn't, it's not a negative connotation, but, you know, it is. When you see what happens, you see the interactions, you know, if you're out there dating, you feel like you need to apologize for that choice.
Yeah. And we're kind of fascinated by this phenomenon where people, you know, I mean, we know that, you know, sexual attraction or desire is something that we don't have a lot of control over, even though we know that it has a lot of cultural and, you know, I guess political implications sometimes, you know, particularly for queer pride, for instance, or LGBTQAI plus identities, you know, have become more visible. And there's been a lot of like very conscious, you know, pride associated with those identities and advocacy. And I think straight culture doesn't have that. We don't associate, you know, being cis straight person with being proud of a culture that you're a part of or, you know, particularly kind of enthusiastic or excited about, you know, straight culture, which is different from saying that we think that all straight people are in miserable relationships. That is not what we're saying. And I think it's often misconstrued that way. But we're really concerned with the kind of, with the message of straight culture, I guess, and what men and women are expected to accept or tolerate in those relationships.
Do you think, though, it's kind of like saying, oh, no, we've now been overlooked, it's our turn to step ahead? Is that step into the light and be proud of ourselves? Something that's been going on for many, many years? Or is it just the fascination and how it's turned, the culture has kind of turned that way?
Well, we've taken it from a lot of different perspectives, and I think that each of the podcasts that we've delivered so far, you know, or that we've produced so far, take a really different view. So Jennifer Hamilton talks a lot about domestic ecologies and the family and the way that that marriage and straight marriage and cishet monogamous marriage in particular, yes. You know, has a collection of expectations and also really quite serious compromises around career and family and, you know, workload and things like that. And then Felicity Joseph, in her interview with Jane Ward, talks a lot about, talks about gendered violence, but also desire in straight relationships. And Jane Ward has this great point. Jane Ward is a lesbian sociologist who works in the United States on gender and wrote a book called The Tragedy of Heterosexuality. So if anyone's interested in pursuing this further, that's a great place to start. It's a really accessible, fascinating read. Yep. But Jane talks about, you know, what she would love to see see differently in heterosexual relationships is that, speaking of men in particular, in this instance, she talks about wanting men to kind of love women. You know, not just the woman that they're married to or the woman that they're dating or they're in a relationship, but to love women and to love things about women, you know. And so we sort of see a lot, one of the things that's noticeable about heteropessimism is a kind of, you know, that kind of really tired battle of the sexes kind of discourse around, you know, men are this and women are that. And Jane kind of makes this point where she's like, you know, when Jane actually says about her own experiences, her own sexual experiences, that even if she's having a one-night stand or even if she's having a fling with someone, she wants that to be a feminist experience. You know, she wants everyone to feel respected and seen and valued, and everyone's desire to be, you know, to be sort of sought after and, you know, and cared for. And Jane kind of wants, you know, she says that she wants that for straight culture, not just individual, you know, straight people who have worked it out, you know, or who do find respectful relationships, but for the culture itself to require that, or to kind of create that as an expectation of you know, of coming together.
Are we overthinking something as simple as sex? Is that no, I agree with the sentiment, but
yeah. It's not just sex. I mean, I think sex is an obvious a way into this discussion, I guess, and it's probably one of the more salacious entry points. Yeah. But yeah, like I say, there's lots of different, you know, yeah, gendered violence, domestic economy. You know, my colleague Matt Allen talks about Australian masculinity and the Australian legend.
Yes.
You know, and the ways that that legend actually is really quite deeply heteropessimistic, that it doesn't centre, you know, marriage, you know, in a man's life, right? In a straight man's life.
Yeah.
In a, you know, in this Australian kind of legend construction.
Yeah.
It's much more about mates and, you know, spending quality time with your good friends.
Yes.
And that marriage is something that you do because it's culturally required of you, and you kind of need to have children, but it's not really the center, the kind of orienting center of a man's emotional and kind of, you know, intimate life, and that actually he should draw more from his male friends than he would from his wife. So there are lots of different entry points into this. Yeah. And that we've also, the next stage I think for us is to really kind of critique whiteness, and the kind of, the kind of middle class location of this idea, you know, that, I mean, it is a kind of a very white middle class expression. A lot of the discourse on the internet is sort of, around this kind of bourgeois kind of middle class relationships, you know. And I think that marriage, for myself and my own work, you know, marriage has like a long and really controlling colonial and neo-colonial history, and the requirement for people to, you know, to organise themselves in nuclear family units and to be, you know, to perform straight relationships, right? That so in other cultures, particularly that have much more expansive gender identities and, you know, kinship structures and, yeah, all these kinds of different ways of organising our cultural and intimate lives were regulated by colonial marriage structures. And I'm really interested in the way that that has kind of proliferated and continues today in different ways.
Brilliant. That's a lot to unpack.
It's a lot.
So I'm going to let people find you, I think, because even I'm like, whoa, my mind is spinning. It sounds very, very interesting. Where can we find the podcasts?
Yeah, so the podcast is on our website, which is
theheteropessimist.com. Yes.
So if you just Google theheteropessimist, all one word, .com, you'll find the podcast there. There's also a couple of hopefully relatively accessible explainers on heteropessimism. And also we've each written some blogs about the ways that we've kind of come to the work and, different entry points, I guess.
Brilliant.
So we're really keen to share this conversation. It's just something we've just started. So as you say, there's lots of different ideas here, and we're just kind of keen to share that with people and hear what other people what other people's response to this idea might be. And
brilliant. Well, it sounds fascinating. I definitely think you need the hour long format. I hope you're doing a long one with it. There's a lot to talk about, and great to explore. Thank you so much for joining me today. And of course, you've got episodes out each Friday. New episodes out each Friday as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've got one coming out today and also next week. So, yeah, look out for those.
Fantastic. Heteropessimist.
Yeah, heteropessimist.
.com. Yep. Thank you so much for your time, Christina. That's amazing.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Again, that was Dr. Christina Kenny speaking about one of the contributors for the new podcast, Heteropessimist.